It's time for Plain Living for Alabama and the Gulf Coast. With nationally recognized nature writer and award-winning horticulture and nature expert, Bill Finch. Bill shares his knowledge of conservation, natural history, and gardening. Let's talk about living and growing in the Deep South with your personal garden and nature consultant. Here's Bill Finch on FM Talk 106.5.
Hey, welcome back. It's a Gulf Coast Sunday morning. It's an Alabama Sunday morning. It's going to be a cold week. Which reminds me, we need to be planting. Oh, I know. You think cold is a signal that you have to go back in and hide. But no, it's the season, and we'll have to talk about that. We're going to get to that, and we're going to figure out what needs to be done right now, what needs to be done in your yard. We need to figure out, what do the seasons look like now? That's a tricky one, because they're changing. We're going to have to figure out how to adapt to that. And I think, you know, how do I know these? What do I know to tell you? And I am mildly embarrassed every Sunday morning. Because I have to stand in front of you and say, oh, I think this is true. I believe this is true. I understand this to be true. Here's what I think is the problem. And dearie me, I know sometimes I'm wrong. Because we're all wrong. We all get it wrong sometime. That's why I try to base my answers as much as I can in science. And in research. And let me tell you, science is not a gospel. It's a method. It's a process for thinking about what it is we're trying to do. It's a process for determining, for recognizing that all of us are wrong, that some observation here or there is probably not the whole story. So how do we determine whether this really works? This really is working the way it should. That's what science is about. It's about repeating things over and over again. And I can tell you I understand this because I've been involved with science for a while. And I'm now doing a research center. And I know that a lot of science is about repetition. And a lot of science is pretty slow. It's kind of interesting. It's not, a lot of people think that science is about, oh, when they say, oh, we're going to do research, what that means is they're going to go on the internet and they're going to find some crazy site that says, oh, all you got to do is pour club soda on your ant bed and the ant bed will leave, and it's because the ants are deprived of oxygen because the club soda has carbon dioxide in it, and it has this sciencey sounding stuff to it, and it's all complete and total 100% absolute baloney. How do you know that? It's interesting. Even scientists, and I will tell you, people who are paid to be scientists can do wrong things, and I won't give too much detail, but back in the day, when we were reporting on science, I worked with Ben Raines, and I worked on some stories looking at things like mercury in the environment. And one of the key studies that was done was paid for by the industry that was producing the mercury, that was causing the mercury to be concentrated. And that study was flawed. It was flawed at its basis. It was silly. It basically was a study that determined whether or not Tetramin fish food had mercury in it, which nobody cared about, and Tetramin fish food, by the way, does not have mercury in it. It was a crazy thing. You can set science up, or you can have the appearance of science and not really do science. Because science is about repetition. Science is about asking the right questions, designing your experiments in the right way, and that means it's a slow process. And even figuring out what somebody does wrong, as what I think we pretty well did, in that experiment where it, that involved trying to determine whether there was mercury around the rigs. Even then, it takes a lot of people looking at it and thinking about it and determining whether or not this is really true. And I have to think about this. You know, it's my problem is we don't do enough science. We don't do enough research. Yeah, I think that we do too much research personally. I'm not the God who determines all this. But I think we do too much research in this way, and we probably don't do enough research over here. I'd love to see more research done over here, but generally speaking, we got to do a lot more research before we really know what we're talking about. It's really important. And I was thinking about that because one of the great surprises in Alabama, where we need to do a lot more research, oh gosh, the research that we've missed. I mean, we're trying to fill in gaps at the research center I work with. But we've missed our own diversity, our own biodiversity, our own assets, the most important assets, the things that we have that no other state has. We miss that. We don't do much research on that at all. It's phenomenal. It's incredible. We may do tons of research about what happens in other states or whatever. But we don't study our own state very well. We don't understand it. We need to do more research there. But here's the thing, and here's the amazing part. If you looked at employers in the state of Alabama, oh, let's take a big one that we think is really important. Let's say something like, forest products. Let's take cars, all the automotive production industry. We talk about that all the time. It's our great savior. It's what's going to save Alabama. Compared to the amount of jobs produced by research in Alabama, cars barely even rank. And certainly not in terms of the money that is brought into the state. It's incredible. University of Alabama Systems may be the biggest employer in the state of Alabama. Probably is. It's pretty close. It's neck and neck with Redstone, Arsenal. Both of those are research facilities. Redstone has 50,000 something jobs that are pretty much all research related. University of Alabama Systems has, somewhere between 45,000 and 65,000 jobs, however you want to look at it. A huge percentage of that is strictly research related. I don't know, maybe 70% of it. Important to research in some really important ways. Huge amount of, listen, you Auburn folks, I'm not ignoring you. Let me add that to the mix. It's hard to say, but it's something like, gosh, Auburn itself is probably close to 15,000 jobs. University of South Alabama, what would Mobile be like without University of South Alabama? Oh boy, healthcare would be a mess. I can guarantee it. It's incredible how much research means to Alabama. And it may be our top single employer. You could juggle some numbers around here and there, but it's huge, and we don't talk about it enough, and we need to be doing more of it. So I want you to think about that. It's really important to us to do more research in this state. It's important not only because we want to know what's going on, we want to understand what's going on. It's important because it's a driver in our state. Please be careful. Please be thoughtful. Science is incredibly important to you in ways you don't know. It has made possible so many things in your life, and it's hugely important to the economy of Alabama. We'll be back.
Me and my best friend Lillian in her blue tick hound dog Gideon, sitting on the front porch, cooling in the shed, singing every song the radio played.
Welcome back to Plain Living for Alabama and the Gulf Coast. Questions on conservation, natural history, and gardening? Talk with Bill Finch. Call 251-343-0106 on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. It's Gulf Coast Sunday morning. It's an Alabama Sunday morning. Boy, I wish we had more science. Boy, I wish we had more research. Science is not a gospel. It's a process. It's a way of thinking. It's not the only way of thinking. Because we have a lot of ways of thinking. We can be, you know, we could just come up with ideas out of the top of our head. We can say, oh, I observed this. This funny thing happening over here. I wonder if that's, but science tells us whether that one thing we saw actually can be repeatable, or is it just an accident? Was it a fluke? That's what science can help us do. We need more of it. So a lot of people, I say things that seems to go against the kinds of things you might hear elsewhere. Like when to prune and how to prune, like how to dig a hole, like what do plants need. I don't make these things up. They're the result of a lot of research I had to do into a lot of other research and compared that research over and over again to see what's right. And I talked to the scientists who do research, who are in contact with the research a lot, and I asked them. Ed Gilman in Florida did a lot of research over the years. It's pretty painstaking. Looking at how you dig a hole. Important question. When you're planting a tree, and what actually helped in terms of survival? And, you know, a lot of people thought, oh, well, I need to dig a really deep hole. Well, I think Ed had a suspicion that the really deep hole idea probably wasn't a great idea, because he understood a little bit about how trees actually looked below ground. And a lot of his research became influential, and it was done by a lot of other folks. And what we now know is that digging really deep holes is not a great idea. Not a great idea at all, particularly in the coastal plain. Now, I'll tell you, it's interesting when you're thinking about Ed's ideas about, and what we've learned and what we know, and how it applies here. Some of those ideas may not apply in other areas where it's much drier. And I think even Gilman would recognize that and would have been very careful to say, okay, let's not push this too far, because other areas need to do their own research and figure this out. But it certainly seems to work really well here, and it's been borne out by repetition. But we need more research, because we shouldn't trust that one series of studies. We need to be able to confirm that over and over again. We need to be able to refine that. There is bogus science out there. There's even wasteful science, because we're humans and we can figure out ways to do bogus things all the time. All of us. And we can also figure out ways to be wasteful. Don't talk to me, because I've been wasteful. But how do we make sure that what somebody is telling you is true? That the research they did was accurate? Well, you got to study it, but you know what you got to do? You got to do more research. You have to fund more research to determine that the research you've already... It's a painstaking process. It's a slow process. It's not somebody going outside and looking up in the sky and saying, oh, I believe this is true. Science is about proving it. That's why research is costly. But it's also why research is so important to Alabama. And it's why we have so many jobs here. And we've done an incredible job bringing in research dollars. We shouldn't lose track of that. If we want to, if we want to get rid of the waste, if we want to get rid of the waste, the thing we have to do is research the waste. We don't just walk out the door and say, oh, let's cut science by 30%, which is about what we were doing, and let's see what happens. Because what that means is that the people who are doing the bogus science, the people who are doing the waste science, nobody's there to double check them, because we don't have the science to do that anymore. We don't have the tools to do that. We need to be doing more science, not less. Something to think about. Something to think about as we go along. So, great question here. It's from Don. I'm actually not being wasteful. I'm weeding my raised beds. Are these easily removed weeds beneficial in a compost, or should I burn them? This is a great question. I find, by observation, that for most plants, if you make a pile of weeds and you don't turn the soil, you generally don't get a lot of weed seeds germinating in there. And you end up with very rich compost, because weeds make the richest compost. If there are no seeds attached to your weeds, you're in great shape. You don't have to worry, because you just make a little pile of them. You're going to have a great bed there. Don't lay them out too thin, but you want to make a nice little pile. Oh, I don't know. Can you see my hands? Surely you see my hands. About 12 inches, 18 inches high, a little pile of weeds. Just let it molder on down. And the weed seeds will generally, even if they're weed seeds there, generally they'll get buried underneath all that stuff. And without sunlight, because we know that's most seeds, not all seeds, most seeds need sunlight to germinate. They're not going to germinate under there unless you start fiddling with your soil and turning it upside down. And every time you turn your soil, this is one of our discoveries, this is quite evident, and it's something that we've confirmed over and over repeatedly. When you turn your soil, you turn up weed seeds that are buried in the soil and that would never germinate otherwise until you start turning the soil. Another problem with tilling, another problem with turning the soil. So yeah, just keep, Don, keep that, just make it a little pile of weeds. Make it so high. Oh, what did I say? 18 inches high? Make it 18 inches high. Make it 2 feet high. Somewhere in there so that it will molder down pretty quickly, particularly if they're green weeds, and put it in a place where you want something to grow really well, maybe this summer. Don't turn it in. Don't turn it up. Just let it sit there. Put your plants there. You're going to be really surprised. It's going to be incredibly good soil. Weeds are the best from a gardening standpoint. There's even some science research that pretty well demonstrates this, that weeds are among the best cover crops. We go out and we try to find cover crops, and we spend a lot of money sowing this particular cover crop or that particular cover crop. But in terms of just generally improving the nutrients in the soil, the weeds are going to do it better than most cover crops. And that's because there's a wide variety of them, and they're taking up a variety of nutrients, and they're restoring the soil. So how do you do that without the weeds taking back over again? And well, you be careful not to turn the soil. And you've got to deal with the weed seeds. That's one of the issues. You have to think about that. And at a large scale, you have to do some other thinking about it. You have to figure it out. That's sometimes why we compost weeds. By composting, the compost bed gets hot enough that it kills the weed seeds. And that's fine, too. But let me tell you, you can also just make a weed pile. And don't turn it. Don't turn it again. And you're going to get the benefits of those weeds. And that'll be a particularly rich soil. I've used it. I've used weeds a lot to grow plants. Used them a lot to grow plants. All right. We'll be back. Give us a call, 251-343-0106.
Sugar magnolia blossoms blooming. It's all empty and I don't care. So my baby down by the river, we should have to come up soon, but there.
Welcome back to Plain Living for Alabama and the Gulf Coast with Bill Finch. Ask Bill about gardening and nature in your backyard. Call 251-343-0106 on FM Talk 106.5.
Yes, sir. I think the longer I live and the more I realize that the only way to make sure that we're not being fooled by science is to do more science. And better science. And make sure that science is well reviewed. It's almost like sometimes we need inspector generals of science who can go through and say, I don't know. And then we do that to some degree with some of the better journals. And we do that as part of the whole process of science. But always, science, the only way to eliminate fraud in science, the only way to eliminate waste in science, is to do more science. And it's just the way it is. And that's something we need to think about a lot. I think about this every time I answer a question because I wish I had more science. But thankfully, I get to depend on how science that other people have done. And I try to review that as carefully as I can and make sure it's accurate. And I find that even reputable science journals are sometimes don't work. And they may not work because our climate's different and nobody thought about that. And I think, gosh, I wish we had done that research here. I wish we had had more money to do the research here. You know what I'm saying? And maybe the science would have been more accurate because sometimes it doesn't. Science that has to do with nature and that has to do with agriculture doesn't move well from one place to another with forest. You can't do research in Michigan and assume it's going to work here. I know that's the kind of research people do when they go on the internet and look up their buddies somewhere else and think, oh, well, it worked for them, it must work for me. Well, you got to think about a lot of things before you do that. Just thinking about how we understand how unusual we are here and when the seasons occur. And let's just stop and talk a little bit about seasons. You know, if you think there's a science to seasons, and I think there is, we don't research this well enough. We should. But basically this idea of four seasons is something we inherited from Europe. And I'm sure it probably works reasonably well in most of Europe. I won't guarantee it, but I think it probably does. It doesn't work at all here. It stinks here. It doesn't help you at all to determine when you should garden. We need more research on what is a season in Alabama. And you know what? Seasons are changing even in Alabama. I've got to say, if I looked at the past 150 years of seasons in Alabama, I'd say there's been some shifts. And we need to take that into account, and it's harder to do. It's even bigger shifts in most of the country. What was a season in Minnesota 40 years ago, it's completely blown apart because the climate has changed so much in Minnesota, changing somewhat less here, but we're still seeing some changes in seasons. There are six seasons in Alabama based on my observations. I wish we had more research to back this up, and I wish I had more data, and I wish I understood what was going to happen over the next 50 years, and I'm not sure I do. I'm quite sure I don't. I have some, you know, I have some sense that things here may change less dramatically than they do in other places, but I could be completely wrong. And I base that on what we've seen from research over the past. But based on what I'm seeing now, I think we got six seasons. We're February 15th. Well, dadgummit, that was yesterday. Sometime between February 15th and February 20th, we switch over to spring on the Gulf Coast. And in fact, I'm seeing it all across Alabama. And it's something you should think about. I know that this isn't the way they talk about spring in New England. And I know they don't talk about it this way in Michigan or Ohio or, you know, wherever else. But look around you. It's happening. I notice the elms. I think they're mostly the winged elms now are blooming. The red maples are blooming all over the state. The silver maples are blooming all over the state. I mean, I'm talking about from North Alabama to South. And shoot, the red maples, they'll start blooming 1st of February easily in the swamps around Mobile. And even with all that wetness, they'll be blooming very early. And that's really sort of the first little inkling that spring's about to happen, right? Flowering. These trees are doing it. You could see that there are multiple springs. Maybe you could think there are multiple springs that we want to tap into when we're planting. And that's why I say there's never a spring planting season. There are multiple planting seasons here in Alabama that you got to make use of. But boy, we are coming up on a big one. If you planted your peas already on the Gulf Coast, I think you're going to be okay. Don't worry about it. They're great. They'll come up. They're going to manage this cold just fine. We could have some extreme cold at some point that maybe catches the peas that you planted, but they'll probably be fine. And we did have a problem last year because there was an outlier in terms of springs, and we had a frost that was late. I hope that doesn't become a consistent pattern. There's some indications it might, but I hope it doesn't. We're going to have to prepare for that. We're going to have to think about that. We have to do more research into that. We're going to have to be more scientific about understanding what a season is and how to adapt to it. But in general, it's time, folks. It's just time. You got to get, I hope your tomatoes are started. I would say this is probably your very last chance. If you're in North Alabama, you still got some time. This is maybe about the time to start your tomatoes. If you're in South Alabama, you just about miss a boat. But go ahead, try to get some tomatoes started as soon as you can, because you really need to get them out in March. It's too cold to get them out this week. If you have, however, some of those, the wall of water, I don't know what you call them, water teepees, whatever you call those things, the water-filled teepees that people, you could put your tomatoes out, I don't know, I wouldn't put them out in the midst of the cold this week, but you could easily put them out this weekend. And they'd do fine, and you'll have a real head start. One way to think about it, and we're going to have to use those teepees more often on the Gulf Coast particularly, and maybe even in other parts of Alabama because of the way some of these climate events are kind of squeezing us. It's getting a little hotter than we would like at night earlier in the summer, even as we're getting more cold spells occurring later in February and March. We're getting squeezed a little bit, and we might have to do some things around that. But yeah, boy, it's time to do it. I think it's probably fine to start pruning now. A great time to start pruning. Probably the very latest that I would try to plant a lot of shrubs and trees, unless I want a lot of trouble. You can certainly plant them in March and April and May, and you can go to a lot of trouble and they'll survive. But we're going to come on to the April and May droughts, which happens, particularly in South Alabama, and you better be there to water them. There are these brief periods where it doesn't rain much, where the plants don't have a lot of roots established, and if you had gotten them established in fall, you'd have been better off. So, which brings me to this question from Rusty. It's, when's a good time to plant swamp milkweed and sunflowers? Swamp milkweed, Rusty, by the way, is not native to South Alabama, at least the one that's commonly grown. Now, I don't know which one you've gotten, and it's, you know, it's going to do not, it's going to do okay here. You'll probably get it to live. Sunflowers is a lot of different kinds of sunflowers. It depends on what kind. But generally for native sunflowers and for swamp milkweed, I would have planted the seeds in fall. And that's because we've done the research, we have the observations, we've seen this repeatedly. Those seeds need a period of cold, wet cold, in order to break the seed coat so that they'll germinate. Not all native seeds are that way, but a lot of them are. And most sunflowers are that way. So I simply, for most native sunflowers, I plant them in fall. Now, if you've got an annual sunflower, like the kind that you get from Burpee, or whatever, Parks, or whoever, is growing those annual sunflowers with the big sunflowers, those are annual sunflowers. They will need to be planted in spring. They're different. Native sunflowers in fall, the ones that are perennial, that are not annuals, plant them in fall. And even many of the native annuals, probably better planted in fall. But the ones that you get from the grocery store, the ones that you get from the, you know, from the regular catalogs, those sunflowers, they'll want to be planted sometime in March. And that's probably about the best time. Swamp sunflowers in fall. Nothing, and I can't think of anything you'd want to do in late March with those sunflowers. But Rusty, tell me what you're thinking and tell me why you're thinking this and let me know. And also let me know what kind of sunflowers you're interested in growing. So, David, thank you, David. Always good to hear from you. Bill, do you think I have missed the window for pruning Heather's roses this year? This is the second year for them. They're a bit straggling. Started to leaf out from, I think, warm weather. That's my hesitation. Take care. You know, David, I think you're fine. You're fine. You can go ahead and prune them. No, I don't think you'll have any problems at all. They'll still have plenty of juice left. And in some ways, David, if you think about it, if they're straggly, you don't want to encourage a lot of new straggly growth as well. And this will take up, having produced a little bit of growth already, this will take a little bit of the starch out of those roses. They may not grow back as quickly, but that's okay. They'll be more compact. So no, I don't think you've had a problem at all. And because they've already started breaking bud, you're probably not going to make a lot of difference on those at all. In general, yeah, you're up in Birmingham. I still think you're fine. It'll be a while before they recover and start. If we're going to get some cold temperatures, it's not going to be too warm. I think you're fine. They're going to keep those plants stable, and I think this is a fine time. This is the normal time that I would have pruned roses up around Gardendale. So I think you're not too late at all. There is some budding out going on with various plants, and we'll talk about that when we come back.
I'm living in the garden.
FM Talk 106.5 with Plain Living for Alabama and the Gulf Coast.
call 251-343-0106. Here again is your personal nature expert, Bill Finch.
All right, looking at lots of pictures. Oh, those be dark. Those are ugly psychos right now, aren't they? Listen, I don't think you'll have any problem pruning those back. I'd go ahead and do it. They're ugly. Just prune the. You don't want to live with that. I know you don't. It's not going to hurt appreciably to go ahead and prune those back. Those are just leaves. And I tell people, you know, even with bananas, when the banana leaves get burned early in the year, if it's driving you crazy, those banana leaves offer a little bit of protection. But if you just cut the leaves off, you'll be fine. But there's no need to cut the whole. If you cut the whole trunk off, and it hasn't fruited, and it's the right size, etc., you're going to lose any chance of getting fruit, which you could well do. Now, this year, I'll admit, we had some cold weather. I think you're going to have a harder time with your bananas than usual. But the leaves, you're okay pruning them off. Don't prune into the hard wood, though. And with the what we call sago palms, which are not palms, but in fact a type of cycad, which we could go into that in more details at some point, and it would be fun. Cycads are actually much older than palms. But the, you know, sort of in the history of the world sort of thing. But those are just leaves, and they're not the woody part. Now, you can prune the woody part of your cycad as well if you want to, and this is a fine time to do that, if you want to do that. But not if you want it to produce leaves right away. Let's talk about it. You can ask me about your cycad and what you think you should do, and it really is sort of an ornamental question. It's less about the health of the plant than it is about what's ornamental to you, what's pretty to you, what's pretty to your neighbors. And, you know, it may not matter what's pretty to your neighbors. I often like to say that and remind people of that. Lots of questions. So, yeah, go ahead and prune that off, B-Dark. That was an easy one. Don, I want to get back to this question that Don asked me about. Don's active this morning. He got a lot of questions. And this one I understood perfectly well. Don says, you know, with this excessive heat, maybe I need to put a shade cloth over my plants in summer. And that's the problem. The problem is this thing called photosynthesis. The problem is plants are green. The problem is most every plant you have that you want fruit from is going to need all the sunlight it can get. If you could put a shade cloth so that it got sunlight until about 11 o'clock in the morning during summer, and the shade cloth was on until about 2 o'clock and then you took it off, I think you'd actually do pretty well. But that's a trick, because plants have got to have a lot of full sun, and the morning sun and the afternoon sun are the most important. So that's one of the lessons that we learn, is that we need to make sure that we have as much sunlight from the east and the west in summer as possible. It matters less about what's happening on the south side in summer. We want as much light as possible from the east. Think about that. Think about that when you're planting your garden. It's a way of mitigating, reducing the damage of heat, is to get as much sunlight as possible from the east and as little sunlight as possible directly overhead at noon, and some shade in the afternoon. But simply putting a shade cloth over your plants that's pretty low to the ground that doesn't allow the sunlight to creep under there during the morning could be a problem. So one thing to think about, and you could put the shade cloth on if you could draw it on every day at 11 o'clock. Another way of thinking about the fact that our summers are getting, particularly the nights, and that's the biggest issue, is not actually the daytime temperatures, but the nighttime temperatures for a lot of plants. Because if they don't get a break at night, they'll tolerate a lot of heat during the day. If they get a break at night with a little bit of cooling off, and that's true for a lot of plants, it's particularly true for things like tomatoes. Most tomatoes. And so our problem is things are not cooling off at night. And so what does a shade cloth do at night? It actually may make the plants a little warmer, and that actually is counterproductive. So, yeah, Don, I don't think the shade cloth is a great idea in general. I do think having that eastern light's important. I think that's also why I'm saying we need to plant as early as possible for a lot of plants, particularly tomatoes, and things like a lot of squashes, particularly, and a whole series of things, melons. Get them in the ground as soon as possible. And that means if we're going to use devices, we want to use those devices this time of year. So if we want to, you know, this wall of water thing is really good. Frost cloth, really useful. And those are devices that we probably should be getting used to. And more, they're more better than just plain old plastic sometimes. So we're going to have to get used to those devices if we're going to adapt to these changes in climate and this increasing heat that we're seeing. And the fact, oh gosh, what an annoying thing. It's like we're getting squeezed. And the fact that we're getting these cold spells at least as late as we used to, and sometimes even later than usual. As last year, this happened last year where we got that late cold spell in March. And it's just things we're going to have to adapt, and we're going to have to think about it, and we're going to have to, oh my gosh, we're going to have to talk about seasons, and we're going to have to talk about how seasons are a reflection of how weather's changing, and we're going to have to study our seasons better. And if you want to, we're probably going to have to learn a little bit about climate and how climate has changed over many, many millennia. And can change again, and is changing again, and we're going to have to adapt to it. We're going to have to adapt to it. Something to think about. We're not going to have to, we can't be afraid to talk about it. Because we're gardeners. And you know what? If we can't talk about it, we're in sad shape. My grandfather and my father used to say that when the pecans bloomed, frosts were over. Pecans are generally late blooming. They are. They're generally late leafing out. They're generally late blooming compared to a lot of other trees. Elms bloom very early. Maples bloom very early. They're blooming now all over the state. At least many of them are. The American elms haven't started, I think, in many places. Probably American elms have started in Mobile, now that I think about it. But in North Alabama, they haven't started. But pecans are late blooming. What does that tell you? Not much. I wouldn't base my planting on that, because pecans sometimes can't predict the changes in climate that we're seeing now, and I wouldn't base too much on that. But they are late blooming. Hey, we're going to be back. I love this song. I can drive you crazy. I know it.
Well, I can't hunt and I can't fish, but I can drive you crazy, yes I can. Well, I can't even make a dish, but I can drive you crazy, yes I can.
It's time for Plain Living for Alabama and the Gulf Coast with nationally recognized nature writer and award-winning horticulture and nature expert, Bill Finch. Bill shares his knowledge of conservation, natural history, and gardening. Let's talk about living and growing in the Deep South with your personal garden and nature consultant. Here's Bill Finch on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back to Gulf Coast Sunday Mornings in Alabama Sunday Morning. I think you ought to ask the question, as I often ask, how do you know that what I'm telling you is true? How, How do you know that? I don't want you to just walk in the room and believe me. And it's a tough one. I try to base my answers as much as I can on the science that's available. And that doesn't just mean going on the research on the internet and finding somebody who's spouting off about something, who's written a book on something, and taking their word for it. I want to see the research. I want to see how they did it. I want to understand how they did it. I want to understand how they set up their research methodology, as we like to say. I'll tell you, I am not, some people have said, I should tell you, I'm not a PhD. I don't have a doctorate. I don't get, personally myself, funding for research that I do myself. I don't even get even any federal dollars for the research center I run. Maybe I should. Probably I should. But I don't. But I work with people who do, and I depend on them. I work with people who do have PhDs, and I depend on them to do the kind of tedious work, the kind of careful, thoughtful, and boy, tedious work that is required to do good science and to get the answers. And I think about the hole digging thing over and over again when I tell you about how I know what we know about how to dig a hole. And what we know about digging holes just completely turned the whole hole digging enterprise upside down. If you read about how to dig a hole 50 years ago, it would be very different than the current research on how to dig a hole. Because we know that digging these super deep holes is really a bad thing, and we know why. And we know a little bit, we now think a little bit more about not just our ability to dig a hole and to prove that we can dig a big hole, but that it's about the plants and how their root systems work. And we now know a lot more about how a whole series of things that came from research. Really good to know. Research is really important to us here in Alabama, and that's where we started this conversation, and I just can't get over it, because research is probably, may well be the largest employer in Alabama. It's pretty close. It is very close. Certainly the car manufacturing industry doesn't come anywhere near the number of people employed in research, and yet we rarely talk about it, except now we're fixing to talk about it, because we're about to see some big cuts if our delegation doesn't get on the ball, and it's going to be huge for our economy, because it is huge for our economy, this research, but it's also important for our state. We need to be doing more research here, not less. Alabama, even though research is still one of our biggest employers, we're still very underserved when it comes to good research. I want somebody out there to do research on our seasons. Dadgummit. Don't take my word for it, which is observational. Pretty good observations. But I think we need to do more research on what makes a season and how our plants are going to adapt to that. And when to plant things. And so let's get around to that question. Is now a good time to plant a tulip magnolia? Tulip tree magnolia, whatever you want to call it. Saucer magnolia. Asian magnolia, sometimes they're called. Japanese magnolias. A lot of different names. The best time to plant an Asian tulip, whatever, magnolia, is the best time to plant virtually every tree, which is fall. I know that's not what you're hearing when you read about planting in Michigan, but you've got to understand we don't live in Michigan. We live in Alabama. And fall is the best time to plant by far. Can you still plant those trees now? Yes, you can. I would not delay another day. I would plant as soon as you can get out and brave the wind, I would get out and plant that magnolia, because the longer you wait, the more you're going to have to baby that thing through spring. And if you had planted it in fall, because our climate is very different than the climate in the rest of the country, if you had planted it in fall, it would have kept growing. It would have developed roots during fall, as most trees do. It would have settled in. It would have been well established. It would have taken advantage of every little warm phase of winter. And you know what? Ground didn't freeze. Those roots are still developing. And particularly true for those deciduous trees. They're really going to do a lot of root growth. And that means that by the time spring droughts come along, which will happen sometime around late April and May, we're going to get these. You may not have to water it too much, or maybe not even at all. I'm not going to promise that. But I'm going to tell you that you're going to have to water a lot. If you plant now, you wait even later, you're going to have to water a whole bunch. Plant in fall. It's the best time to plant. There you go. Let's see what else we got here. Don, you know, I do think if you're going to address the insects, one of the things I'm finding, and I'm using them, there are some insect, what do you call them? Insect cloths, I think is what they call them. And they allow a lot of light through, but they don't allow the insects through. The unfortunate thing about those is that they actually increase the warmth underneath a little bit. And so you want to, I have to be cautious. I only use them with certain types of plants. I think they probably work fine with eggplants, for example, those insect cloths. They don't stop a lot of light transmission, but they can stop things like, oh, if you've got a problem, and I don't see as much problem with this in South Alabama, but as you move farther north, you get more and more problems with flea beetles on eggplants. And they can just, I mean, in my dad's garden in the Black Belt, they just would eat them up. And it could be a big problem. You really got to figure this one out. And it can help to put an insect cloth over those. And 10 feet up is not useful. You got to cover it to the ground. It needs to be close to the plant. But that's a different thing than providing shade. So it's a trick. What do we do about the excess heat in summer? We need to do some research on that. Wish we were doing more research on that. Wish Auburn had the funding to do more research on that. We don't do as much research on gardens as we used to. And why don't we? Because we don't have the research money to do it. And it would be fun to talk about why we don't and where we could be getting that money. Maybe we could have gotten it from USDA. I don't think we'll be getting it from USDA in the coming year or the next year or the next year because, well, there you go. Let's see what else we got here. Did I get that? I got that one. Satsumas. Yeah, so we've said this over and over again, and I'm going to say it again. Stop up your ears if you've heard me saying it before, but it's going to need repeating. A lot of Satsumas are going to lose their leaves. Not all of them, but a lot of them. A lot of oranges are going to lose their leaves. A lot of grapefruits, I guarantee you, are going to lose their leaves. Limes and lemons, oh, that's over in a category over by themselves. They're going to lose their leaves. But let me tell you something. It was cold, but do not prune the woody parts of your plant. Do not, let me repeat this again, do not prune the woody parts of your plant. Wait. Wait. We'll be back.
FM Talk 106.5, home for plain living for Alabama and the Gulf Coast.
Let's talk about living and growing in the Deep South with Bill Finch. Call 251-343-0106.
All right. I'm glad to be back at it. It's got a lot to talk about. So where am I going to start? Let's start with Cynthia. What are we going to do about the bottle brush plants? And this is the callistem, and this is these are the red bottle brushes. I'm sure we're talking about. So let me say, some of those are less hardy than others, no question. And they will see a lot of damage. Some of them are quite hardy and should see no damage. So it's going to depend on what variety of callistemon you have, what variety of red bottle brush. I suspect that most of those plants will be back. And even if they've lost a lot of leaves, I'd have to see each individual plant. But again, let me say, there is nothing you can do that is more important than doing nothing. I like that. There is nothing you can do right now for your winter damaged plants that is more important than doing nothing. Let's all repeat that. You share that with your friends. Doing nothing. Very important right now, because you don't know where the damage is. You don't know how much of that plant is damaged. And there's not really an easy way to tell. It doesn't hurt the plant at all for you to delay doing things right now for that plant. Doesn't hurt it at all. But you will hurt it if you over prune right now. You will prune off some what's probably very good wood. Just hold off. You don't know. You may be surprised at how much of that callistemon or those citrus come back from the woody growth. You may have lost your leaves. They may not be evergreen this year, but they'll probably reassert themselves at somewhere on the stem. Now, I don't doubt that there will be some trees that we lose. I'd be surprised if we lost the callistemons, even the least hardy ones. But I'm not going to rule it out. If you lose your callistemon, you tell me, but you're going to have to remember to do that sometime in June, because that's probably when you're going to figure it out. Too early to know. You're not going to know now. And there's nothing you can do that's going to improve that. Does it drive you crazy to have sticks? You know, in that case, I guess you can prune it as deep as you like. You're not going to help the tree and the callistemon bush, and you may actually do more damage than the cold. Just saying. One of the consequences of cold is that we have to live with some bare branches for a while. But you know what? Most of the world lives with bare branches and doesn't say anything about it. Many of our plants in our yard have bare branches during winter, and nobody says anything about it. Don't worry about it. It's fine. So, nothing. The most important thing you can do for your plants right now that have cold damage is doing nothing. There it is. Let's see what else we got. So the working on the soil here, lots of organic matter added. Yeah, and so we got an experiment going on. We got a kind of a research project going on. It's not strictly controlled in the way that really good research would be done, but it's the kind of way that most of us have to do it, because we don't do enough research. We don't pay to have enough good research done, so we have to kind of do it in our own clumsy way, and it's not always super reliable. But this is a good experiment. But it bears watching and thinking about. So one of our listeners decided they were going to grow potatoes and use a wall of water. And they planted them in mid-January and let them grow up. some of the and let those potatoes be protected, because potatoes love cool temperatures, but they're tropical, and if it gets too cold, it'll burn the foliage. They're from the cool tropics. There are such things exist. It exists, and they're from places that don't get much frost, high in the mountains. And that's where they are. So you got to kind of protect them. Here's the thing about a wall of water. A wall of water is going to make the thing inside of it much warmer than the surrounding air. And it may make it so much warmer on the warm days that it actually slows the plant down and stresses the plant, particularly if it's something like a potato. So it is going to be interesting, and I don't know how it's going to pan out. And this is why we would have to do a lot of replicates, and we'd have to think about it, and we'd have to do some pretty painstaking research to see what effect that wall of water is going to have. One of the effects of walls of water on tomatoes, for example, and I can sort of imagine why this would be the case, when they did the sampling on it, is that if you kept the wall of water on there too long, it slowed down. The plants were slower to grow into fruit. So you actually ended up getting your fruit much later in the year because of the wall of water, even though your plant actually grew faster than the others. So you want to be careful about those walls of water. You want to think about them. And I don't know how it's going to affect those potatoes. One thing I would say at this point, it's getting too warm in general to use a wall of water. And even this week, I think it's probably not a great idea to do it if you can use leaves to accomplish the same thing. So if you've got some leaves right now, and we're getting down into the 30s, which is going to be, and it may be even in the upper 20s, on the Gulf Coast, and we're going to get down in the, oh my goodness, into the teens in North Alabama. What a pain. But if you're getting down into the upper 20s with your potatoes, they can get frostbitten. They'll probably survive it, but they'll probably get frostbitten. It'll set them back. Take some leaves and just dump it on there. Just take a spare bag of leaves and dump it on there. It makes a lot of difference. And you could take that bag of leaves and put a box around it, and that's fine too. And that way it's not going to get too hot during the day. And don't worry about whether they get sun. Just wait till this cold spell's over. And the potatoes will grow right out of it, and they'll be fine. You could stress, I'm worried that you're going to stress those potatoes with the wall of water eventually. And that's would be a worry. And they're going to outgrow the wall of water here pretty soon. So we don't want to keep putting that wall of water on there. Probably was a benefit very early in January. As the days got genuinely warmer, generally warmer, into February, it could have been a little bit of a source of stress. So just thinking about it. Now, experiment, which you're doing already, and you're trying it a lot of different ways just to do it, but think about the many different effects that wall of water will have as you're working on it. Okay, let's see. I've been out of the state for 18 days. When I got home last night, all my sagos had turned completely down. Do I cut them back to the stalk? It's an entirely, I've said this before, cutting your sagos back right now is entirely an aesthetic decision. Entirely an aesthetic decision. The sago is probably perfectly fine. Probably not going to see a lot of damage. Your leaves were burned, but you'll have some new leaves emerging. If you want to cut those leaves back right now, you certainly can. They're just leaves. Don't cut into the bud. Make sure you don't cut into the bud that's at the top of that trunk. And it will put out new leaves. And a lot of people do cut back their sago leaves every few years just to keep it from looking less messy. That's messy's a relative term. and it's a subjective term. But a lot of people do that. You're okay. Don't panic about your sago. Cut it back if you can't stand it.
You get Plain Talk on Plain Living. Let's talk about living and growing in the Deep South with Bill Finch. Call 251-343-0106 on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. Gulf Coast Sunday Morning, Alabama Sunday Morning. Question about transplanting, and this is one of those tricky questions. Is it okay for... The question is basically, can I transplant Miscanthus, Sinensis, zebra grass with a Meadow Beauty tool? And that's the question that's asked. The question that I have to ask is, should you do that? And I just got to start there, to be fair. Miscanthus sinensis is considered one of the most invasive plants that we've got right now. It's hard right now to know how bad that's going to be in Alabama. I do think that in the Huntsville area, I think Huntsville is very vulnerable to this invasive zebra grass, Miscanthus sinensis. It could be a serious issue. So just be careful. I don't know what to say. I know, I just am telling you. Can you do this with it's a pretty tough grass, and that's one of the, and it's pretty tough. When it goes to seed, it produces youngins that, under the right conditions, can be even worse than the parents, much more aggressive than the parents about invading native areas. So the question is, should you divide and transplant that Miscanthus? Oh, gosh. I can drive you crazy, I know. Yes, I can. But that's the important question. You can transplant that grass almost any way you like. It is a warm season grass. Pretty sure it is. I think it's a C4. It really isn't going to do a lot of root growth until the ground warms. But this would be an okay time to transplant it. But I'm just telling you, please be thoughtful about it. I don't think there is necessarily a wrong way to do that. I think if you start it with a transplant shovel, that's fine. You could probably lift it out just fine with your Meadow Beauty, maybe even easier than with a shovel. And that's a good thought. I haven't tried it. I hadn't tried it with a native grass, a warm season grass, but it's something to think about, right? Maybe it does work well with a native warm season grass. But with an invasive warm season grass, it may also work. But that's just what I want you to think about. Carol, forgive me. There it is. Only one in the neighborhood. Right now, we should think about it. We should be careful about it. There you go. Let's see what else we got that we have not gotten to yet. We talked about the Satsumas. Rusty, did I help with the sunflowers? Let's talk about those sunflowers and what kind you've got, and let's talk about whether what the best time is to plant. I'm happy to do that. Catherine, my goodness, am I going to lose you? Catherine, are you still there?
Yeah, hi, Phil.
How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
Good.
We have a fig tree. And it's several years old. Last summer we had a bumper crop of it's brown turkey. And we need to cut it back so we can reach the figs this summer. And I read that you can cut it back at a certain time of the year before it buds out, and it has started budding out, so I don't know what to do.
Yeah, so the good thing about figs is that they produce their flowers, and what you're actually eating is flowers. You're not actually eating fully formed fruit. I know that's weird, but that's the way figs are. And you're eating non-pollinated flowers, and they produce those flowers on new wood. So uh-huh. That means you can really brutalize them in spring and cut them back really hard, and they'll be fine. Uh-huh. And this is not a bad time to do it at all. And don't worry if they're budded out. I always repeat, you can have figs or you can have a fig tree. And as you've discovered, and if you have a fig tree, if it's too tall, you're not going to be able to reach the figs. The birds are going to reach, and the squirrels are going to reach the figs before you do. And you're not going to get very many figs. So in places where figs are grown commercially, they prune them into shrubs. And don't let them get too big. And it's pretty easy to do that. You, Catherine, you may have heard, but we'll share this with everybody else. About every year with a fig, because they're going to grow lustily in our climate. And they're going to put on a lot of new growth, more new growth than you'd get in, say, California. So we have to be a little more aggressive with our figs. But in a moist climate like this, they're going to put on so much new growth that each year I would go in and cut out the biggest, fattest trunk. And I would cut it out, particularly at this point. You said yours is about 5 years old?
I think so, Yeah,
I would cut it out within 6 inches of the ground. Just cut it out.
Oh, okay.
And you can do that. You can do that virtually every year. And sometimes, if it gets really out of hand, you might want to cut out more than one or two of those biggest sprouts from the ground and cut them down to 6 inches from the ground. Now, on the rest of them, basically, you can cut them back at about neck height, shoulder height, and just cut them all back. And make sure when you cut them back that you cut them back so that the buds, the little buds where the branches emerge, make sure that those buds are facing outward, and cut them back to where those buds face outward, and you'll be fine. And you'll be fine if you do it right now. That's the way to prune a fig, and this is about the right time to do it. I was looking at my fig and thinking, should I do it now? And I'm thinking, yeah, I got to get to it, probably in the next week or two. And you should definitely, mine's in a little cooler place than yours, but you should definitely do yours now. Go ahead and do it now. You're fine. It's going to be good.
Well, even with this freeze that's coming, should I wait till after the freeze to do it?
No, won't matter. And okay. Here's why. It's not going to sprout. It's not going to make any difference whether the freeze one way or another. If this is a barely a freeze, it will probably burn some of those leaves off. But so what? It's not going to resprout before this freeze is over. It won't resprout, and it'll be another couple of weeks before it even begins to resprout. So you'll be fine.
Okay. You cut them back basically to about shoulder height.
Yeah, because it's all about you. It's all about what size do I need this to be so that I can easily pick these branches. And so they'll branch out horizontally, and it'll look just fine. Don't worry. It's going to look like a fine shrub. But just make sure those bud eyes, the buds, you'll see the little buds where the new growth comes out. Just make sure they're turned outward. Don't cut it back to a bud that's facing inward. You see what I'm saying?
Okay. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Make sure that bud is facing outward so that it will get as much sunlight as possible and so that it won't turn into a tangled mess. But there you go.
Okay. Well, that sounds good.
It does sound good.
Plan.
Yeah. All right, you hit it just right, Catherine.
Well, good. Well, thank you, Bill.
All right, thank you. Yeah, this is the time to do it. It is the time to start pruning throughout Alabama, particularly, I think, You know, with things like, oh, peaches are so hard, I don't want to pretend that I'm not a peach expert, because it's too hard. It's just too hard. Peaches are hard. I think I want to find a peach that isn't quite so hard. And I, you know, there were some wild peaches that I played with for a while, and things happened, and I lost them, and I'd love to find some more wild ones. But peaches are hard. But if you've got a peach, this is the time to prune them. Don't prune them much earlier. Prune them now. And in a way, it kind of lets you know as they're beginning to, as those leaves are beginning, as the flowers are beginning to come out, it's just when they're beginning to show color, they're almost ready to open. That's a great time to prune. It is a fantastic time to prune, rather than pruning back in winter. And some of you may see some flowers coming out already, because we had a lot of winter chill early on, and they might have met their chill requirements, and they may be, some of the ones that have smaller chill requirements may already be budding out. We'll see. But you don't want to prune them back too early. But this is a great time. It's a great time on the Gulf Coast for pruning. It's not a bad time, even farther north, to go ahead and start your pruning efforts right now. Don't do it too early in winter. And generally, don't do it too early in spring. And don't worry if the plants have already begun leafing out a little bit. And this is true for just about every fruit tree, except for citrus. We try not to prune citrus. But almost every fruit tree, it doesn't hurt if there's a little bit of leaves coming out. Not a problem. You can still prune. And that first flush of leaves is actually a great time to prune for most of the plants. There you go. So two folks, Barry and Bruce, both got the same question at the same time. It's amazing. If you plant the fig cuttings, will you get new fig trees? And Bruce, how would you propagate fig trees from the cutting? So it's almost like Bruce and Barry are thinking simultaneously. I got your messages at the same time. Really odd. But I guess it is the question of the hour. Yeah, you can. And it's you can bury those cuttings, and they probably most of them will actually take. I just bury them in a pile of leaves. You don't have to be too careful about it. And oftentimes they'll develop leaves that have begun to molder. Not dry leaves, but leaves that have begun to molder a little bit. Just bury those cuttings in there, and I suspect quite a few of them, even at this time of year, will actually put out roots, and you'll be able to move them around as you like. Yeah, I'd give it a shot. All right, we'll be back.
Have you ever seen peaches grow on sweet potato vines? Have you ever seen peaches grow on sweet potato vines?
Welcome back to Plain Living for Alabama and the Gulf Coast. Questions on conservation, natural history, and gardening? Talk with Bill Finch. Call 251-343-0106 on FM Talk 106.5.
Yeah. Welcome back. It's the Gulf Coast Sunday morning. It's an Alabama Sunday morning. You can take those fig cuttings. Figs are really pretty easy to propagate, actually. There's a lot of ways to do it. But you can take those cuttings from your fig. Don't necessarily need the biggest ones. In fact, it's more towards the tip. You'll be better. Make them about 12 to 18 inches long. Throw them under some leaves. Find a leaf bed that's got kind of moldy. That's an ideal place. And just put about a foot of leaves on top of them. And let's come back next week and we'll talk a little bit more about the different ways you can go from there. You can just leave them there for that matter, and they'll probably, most of them will probably start rooting if we do it right, and we'll talk about how to do that, or you can put them in a different pot, but just do that if you've made the cuttings. Not a bad time. Research. You know, I got to confess to you folks, I kind of like science. It doesn't tell us everything. Really doesn't. Science itself doesn't tell us anything. It gives us a method. It gives us a method for examining whether what we're seeing, what we're saying, what we're doing is accurate or whether we're making it up. And we do a lot of making up. Like, oh, I'm going to put some club soda on my Ant Bits. Oh, heavens to Betsy, that ain't science. The science would be saying, let's try this. Let's see if it really worked. Let's see if the ants just moved away. Or whether, in fact, we killed the ants because they were deprived of Yeah, you see what I'm saying? That's the difference. Reading stuff on the internet isn't science. That's tomfoolery. Science is doing careful research. And I believe in research. In fact, I believe in research so much that I interrupted my life because I realized we had so little research going on in Alabama, and I realized what's here is so incredibly important, and I realized nobody else was doing it, so we're going to create a research center. And we did, with a lot of help from a lot of folks, to understand better why Alabama is such a diverse state. So I confess to you, I not only like science, I believe in research. And I believe research is incredibly important to this state. And I don't just believe it, I know it. I can demonstrate it. Because the number of jobs that are dependent on research in Alabama will blow your mind. The research done at UAB was incredibly important to a lot of people, including my grandchild. It's an incredibly important place, these research centers across Alabama. You have no idea how much research goes on around Redstone. Now, I might wish they had done the research on something else besides how to blow people up. But you know what? There's a ton of research money going into that place. And if you pull that research money, you've crippled Huntsville. You pull that money in Birmingham, you've crippled Birmingham. You pull that money in Mobile, you've crippled Mobile. Because you think it's cars, you think it's planes. It's research. It's research that plays a huge role in the economy of Alabama, and it plays a huge role in making us who we are and helping us understand who we are and where we live. And we don't need less dollars for research. We need more dollars for research. We need more dollars for research in Alabama, because you don't need to trust me. You need to trust the science. You need to trust the research. I try to convey as much of that research to you as I can. But we need more people doing the research. There's so many things I wish we had more money to research in Alabama that are so important, not just to Alabamians, but to the rest of the country. I'm just telling you, and I'm going to say one more time, let's say, is there waste in research? Is there fraud in research? Oh boy, you betcha. We found it out. It's the same percentage of waste and fraud we see in everything we do. The same amount of waste and fraud you see when you go to church, when you go to the grocery store, when you go to Walmart, when you buy a car. There's waste and fraud out there. It's everywhere. It's the same percentage just about everywhere. How do we know that there is waste and fraud in science? By doing more research. By paying people to test, to make sure that the research that was done before is correct. You want to get rid of waste and fraud in science? You don't pull the money for science to do that. You put the money into rooting out the waste and fraud. You make sure that you have more research that can determine what was wasteful and what was fraudulent. We're going about this in exactly the wrong way. Exactly the wrong way. Sorry. But that's the point. That's the point I want to make. I can't do what I do on this show without the research done by a lot of important people. Some of them in Alabama. I wish we had more research done in Alabama. Very important thing. Be very careful. Be very careful. Probably the largest employer in Alabama. It blows me away. I can't believe we don't talk about it. I mean, car manufacturing, nothing. Next to nothing compared to the amount of money that goes into research and research jobs in Alabama. A huge part of the economy. A huge role in the economy of the state. All right. There you go. What's it time for? It's time to plant. This is your last chance to do a lot of planting. We don't just have one planting in season in Alabama. We have multiple ones. But we don't plant the same thing at each season. And this was the start of spring, my friends. And on the Gulf Coast, the signs are already out there. I know it's going to be cold. The spring everywhere in the world always starts out a little bit cold. You might get a little bit of frost. But spring is happening. It is a bulldozer now. It's starting. It's cranked up. Get out of the way. Get it in or get out of the way, because it's about to happen. Spring's about to happen. We'll be talking more about that in the next few weeks, but let's get prepared for it. And the last reminder of the day, if you've seen some winter damage, the most important thing you can do right now for that winter damage is nothing. Doing nothing. Wait for spring to reveal what the real damage is. We'll be back. Good to talk with you.